Blog Talk Radio.
Well, folks, thank you very much for tuning in to one more edition of Politics Done Right on Coffee Party. I want to thank, first of all, before I even get started with the show, Greg Rusak last week for coming out and actually doing the show for me. I had a brunch where we had a candidate meetup that I had to go through. I had to go ahead and do my civic duties. Anyhow, thank you again, Greg Rusak. I hope you're listening. I see you're here. Thank you very much. That was a great show. Thank you for holding down the fort for me. So,
hey, everybody. This is Janine. I'm also a Coffee Party radio host, and Egberto Willis has just fallen off the line. And so I'm sure that he'll be calling back any second. I'm not sure what his topic is today because I'm just a face. So I'll tell you what, though. You have a caller in 281. I'm going to go ahead and open. 281, welcome to Politics Done Right.
That is me. How are you doing, Janine?
Oh, great. So you're back. All right. I'm handing it back to you, Egberto.
Well, thank you for coming. I don't know what happened. This is about the third time that we've had actual communication-type problems with good old Skyping through Blog Radio, but that's academic. How are you doing, Janine?
Oh, I'm doing well. Looking forward to your show. And I'm also, I do want to point to the fact that I think Blog Talk's becoming very popular. And Debbie Lynn on Molyneux and I on our show, Lunch with Loudon on Thursdays, have also experienced technical difficulties. And so one of the reasons I always want to turn on to our shows is to make sure if something like this happens, there's somebody here who can take the board. So it takes a village, right, Egberto?
It takes a village, and working together, that's how we get things done around here. So we've been successful thus far, and we're moving forward. So I want to keep you on a bit longer, Janine, because what I want you, first of all, I want to put you on the spot on the air. Are you going to be doing the show on Monday night? And she's going to ask, what show? Politics Done
Say
Right
more,
on KPFT.
It might come back to me.
Politics Done Right on KPFT.
To
tell us what we're going to do with Coffee Party going forward.
Oh, well, I certainly could. I'd be happy to do that, Egberto. If you're inviting me to be interviewed, I would just adore that. I think it's great. We also have a Coffee Talk radio show on Monday night, which is Dan Aronson's Politics Done Right. And so I didn't know if he had asked for help, and I hadn't noticed. So I apologize for the pregnant pause. Absolutely. I would love to do that.
No problem whatsoever. Go ahead, Denise.
Excellent. So I'm dying to know what your topic today is so that I can get totally engaged.
Okay. Actually, the topic is threefold today. It's called Benghazi, the success of Obamacare, and our good friend in California, Mr. Donald, who has had that great statement that he made when while talking to his girlfriend. But I don't want to talk to it from a specific point of view of some sort of a racist type story, but more of a of an engaging story of what people don't realize. So I wrote a blog to that effect earlier in the week, and I want to explore that probably later at the end if we can get to it. But the first thing I really want to talk about is what Fujil Sang had to say yesterday on TV with regards to Benghazi. Did you see that at all, or did you see the blog that I wrote about that at all?
I haven't seen your blog.
Yeah.
But there's been some amazing graphics out in the ether, as we like to say, or is it you who calls it the intertube? I think that's so charming. So I like the intertube, and I use that term a lot. But one of my favorites I saw this morning, it was from a nationally syndicated political cartoonist, and it just showed a guy, there was this poor critter laying, a horse laying on the ground, and this guy was just beating it and beating it and beating it. And yeah, so it kind of, I know I remember that one because it sort of captured my notion. A lot of stomping and yelling and inadequate data or inconsistent data out there. And of course, Coffee Party is all about civility and reason. Civility would be in how we speak to each other, and reason would be actually going for the facts. And so I'm hoping your blog does both.
That is actually, that is what, you know, I did, I took it from a different sense, and that is one of the blogs that I'm going to read about it, because what we try to do with that story is to say, you know, think about what really happened. Why is it, such big story now? I mean, he was having a private conversation and with somebody, and that came out, but this person had history. And not only did this person have history, he had the presence today of who he's dealing with, and somehow he couldn't break through the way he spoke. But I want to hit on Benghazi first. So the first blog that I have that I'm, you know how the show goes, I start out with reading a particular blog, and the particular blog that I think I selected first, maybe if I can actually get to it, is something called Obama is the path. Obamacare is the path to single payer healthcare, because there's a report that came out today that's going to be mentioned. I mean, that came out this week that was mentioned in the report that is pretty prescient that people I think need to take heed of. But before I go there, folks, please do remember that this is a call-in show, and the telephone number to call in is 64. You know what is interesting? It came off of my screen, and I don't know the number.
646-929-2495.
There you go, 646. Again, Janine? Anyhow.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good.
So let's go ahead now with the blog as it goes. It's called Obamacare is the Path to Single-Payer Universal Healthcare. And I would love to hear folks comment on this either on the blog, the web page, or otherwise, and it goes as follows. During the healthcare debate in 2009, many progressives fought their hearts out for a single-payer healthcare system. They argued for at least a public option. This would have prevented an unnecessary for-profit insurance system from gouging Americans sans strict regulation. Ultimately, both failed to materialize in the Patient Protections and Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. Many saw the failure of both the public option and single-payer health care as a defeat. In fact, a large percentage of those who were against Obamacare opposed it because it did not include these options. In other words, they opposed it because it did not go far enough. I digress. Whenever I write these things, what I try to provide is the corroborating information. So right there was the information with regards to how the actual polls were taken. And these are generic polls that are done by just about every organization. And these numbers come out pretty darn similar. A few months ago, I stated that progressives should not worry too much. They need to be patient. I explained that Obamacare was simply a framework that would morph. In my post, Obamacare first step to eliminating temporarily that health, eliminating immorality that is health insurance, where I said the following. Obamacare gets rid of the immoral part of health insurance. The practices of rescissions denied coverage for pre-existing conditions and caps will be gone. Many new preventative screenings had to be a part of every plan without copays. 80% or more of premiums must go towards actual health care. There are several health insurance companies. Each one must have its own CEO, CFO, board, advertising, shareholders, buildings, staff, and more and more and more. The cost of duplicating all these expenses is the reason why up to 33% of every insurance premium dollar goes into someone's pocket instead of into healthcare. We're asked to unlearn basic arithmetic in order to accept that both systems could somehow be less expensive or more efficient than a system where all pay a premium to a single entity and that one entity pays the medical bill for those who get sick. No advertising, multiple CEOs, CFOs, board shareholder expenses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it goes on. During the Affordable Care Act debate, there was a public option that would have stimulated the latter. Lobbying summarily got it removed because had it made it into the act, over a short period of time, arithmetic would prevail, as the public option would be less expensive for any given plan. It would then turn Obamacare into a single-payer system by attrition. Notice that in that paragraph, what I was trying to get is something that is a tenet that we speak about here all the time, and that is money in politics. The reason why we didn't get a lot of things that we wanted to get was the corrosive nature of money in politics that actually said, we are going to look out for what's best for singly this group of people, which prevented that eventuality. Moving forward, there are several different pathways to reach the same goal. It is, however, important that the paths are built. Obamacare is a path built with pebbles and stones. It is better than the mud path of years past. As riders demand a smoother path, they won't yearn for the mud path again, but for a paved road. Americans will not go back after tasting health care, health insurance as a right, with all the benefits mentioned above. Exchanges will become single-payer entities as health insurance companies are unable to demand and profit the way they want to. Eventually, exchanges will morph into Medicare for all. The genius of Obamacare is not that it solved the problem in its entirety. The genius is that it made reverting to an immoral system untenable. Following up, I said, lo and behold, when browsing the New York Times this morning, that is a couple days ago, I ran across the article titled Envisioning the End of Employer-Provided Health Plans. The author said the following. By 2020, about 90% of American workers who now receive health insurance through their employers will be shifted to government exchanges created by the health care law, according to a projection by S&P Capital IQ, a research firm serving the financial industry. In truth, the American system of health care, in which most people get private health insurance through their employer, has always been rather odd. Why should quitting a job also mean you have to get a new health insurance plan? Why should your boss get to decide what options you had and negotiate the cost of them? Employers don't get to select our auto insurance or mortgage company. So why should health insurance be any different? The articles, and this is myself now, the articles are all worth reading. Read both those articles in the blog. They're insightful. The sanity of a single-payer healthcare system detached from the employer is coming. Corporate selfish interests will make the process messy. However, it is necessary, more efficient, and less expensive. After writing this article or this post, I got quite a bit of comments. I got a few on Coffee Party that were worth mentioning, but one of the most important ones came to at my site, and what the person said was, well, Egberto, you misunderstood the article in the New York Times. The New York Times spoke nothing about single payer. It simply said people were moving away from employee insurance, employment-based insurance, to the exchange. To which I replied, no, I understand the article quite well. That is the person who said that, he's absolutely correct. The article said nothing about single-payer system. However, when you follow the path of least resistance is from the employer to the exchanges, and the next path is a regulated exchange that ultimately looks out for the well-being of the average American citizen. And looking out for the well-being of the average American citizen ultimately morphs into having the American citizen have better care, and not only better care, less expensive definition is the elimination or reduction of the role of health insurance companies. Think about that. The reduction of the role of health insurance companies. Folks, give me a call. That number is 646-929-2495. Again, that number is 646-929-2495. I want to stay on this subject a little bit longer before we move on to Benghazi. As you know, Benghazi was quite an event. I have a blog on that one as well, but I'd like to hear some of your comments, if at all possible, on what you think about the current healthcare system. 646-929-2495. 646-929-2495. I see one caller here. Is this Jack?
Yeah.
How are you doing, Jack?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, sir.
Okay. I got a comment on all three. I'm trying to put it in one sentence.
Okay. Go Benghazi. For it, Jack.
Okay. I make a comment about, okay, I can figure out how many hearings Daryl Issa has on Benghazi.
Mm-hmm.
That's 1,725,286. And I'm going to write it. I got five different outlets. I'll give them a different number each time, but I'm going to be over a million.
Okay.
Okay, now the second one is, the health, the public option will save you on two counts. At first, if you get health insurance companies out of the equation, but they're
right.
Just interested mainly in profit for themselves.
Right.
Same thing with employers. They only get the employers out of the equation too. The third thing is Sterling. Don Sterling, I have to be a Clippers fan as well as a Bulls fan.
Right.
And, the man is definitely a racist. I don't care what his girlfriend says. Oh, he's a kind, gentle person. He's 80 years old. I'm 82. So what?
Right.
I'm almost 83, as a matter of fact. Next month I'll be 83.
And a good sounding 83, Jack.
Yeah. And then I think public option is going to save the country billions of dollars.
I got you. I am with you.
We've got a good jobs report, but I still don't believe. I don't believe the 288,000. Jobs.
Yeah.
That's another thing. It's good. It's good news, but it's not helping me any.
I hear you. I hear you. But let me put you on hold a second, Jack, and let me jump to 412, and I'll come back to you. 412, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
Hi, Egberto. It's Greg Rusak. How are you today?
Hey, Greg. How you doing, buddy? I really appreciate you holding down the fort for me last week. That was great.
No problem. Glad to do it, and thanks for asking, actually. Hey, make a comment about health care and health insurance, I just wanted to know, I noticed that Janine had to drop off. Are you reconnected to the board? Do you need some help with that?
I have two computers up on the board, but, I mean, I if you're available to play with the boards, come play with us. Keep all the folks entertained. So let's do it, buddy.
Okay,
I love it.
All right, no problem. I wanted to be sure you kind of weren't out there, you know, without any kind of access.
No, but there's one other thing I want to tell people, because I saw some of your blog posts on my wall. I want you to advertise your website, because, as you know, the policy here is that everybody has a voice, and I have a feeling that some voices have been a bit. So if you want, you can go ahead and advertise the year. You know, tell people about where they can hear your voice.
Okay, sure. I have a blog page on WordPress. The URL is Did You Check First. It's one word, didyoucheckfirst.wordpress.com. The name actually just comes from the sheer fact that, like all of us here, I'm interested in discussion of all kinds, and especially the idea of citing reputable sources of information to incorporate into that discussion. Because it's fine to have an opinion, it's better to know the facts. And that's kind of the tagline of my blog site. So I appreciate you giving me a chance to throw that out there. And I welcome any and all comers. I kind of have a bit of a civility rule of my own, but I'm perfectly fine having adult conversations with anyone, as long as it's civil and fact-based, and you can have differing opinions. That's perfectly fine with me.
And let me tell you one other thing I want to mention, Greg, and this is to all our audience at large. I think it is important that we do this, and that we encourage folks to do exactly what you're saying, and that is go along. The Internet is a huge place. It's a big place with a whole lot of voices, and it's important to be well-rounded, that you go all over the place. I read Greg. I read, what's a conservative guy's blog post? I read them all, because I think it is important to help you form your opinions. But go ahead and tell me what you want to talk about, Greg.
Well, and just to add to that too, I do the same thing at Burrow. I quote unquote like Breitbart on Facebook.
Breitbart, that's who I meant, yes.
I kind of thought that's maybe who you're referring to, because that's a fairly well-known news source, we'll call it, that has a very distinct take on things.
Right.
And I will also add this, and another kind of a shout-out to the coffee party. I'm really proud to be a volunteer news curator for the coffee party, because it exposes me to lots of different kinds of information from lots of different places. And I want to encourage your listeners, both here today and those who will hear this later, that they should check out the coffee party, coffeepartyusa.com. Think about getting more involved, more activated, more active as a citizen, and expose yourself to more than just the sources of information that you seek out. Listen to what others are saying too. I think that's really important. I will be the first to admit I don't agree with everything that I see from all these other sources. But it's important to understand where someone else is coming from too.
And not only that, if you know what other things, and 210, I think that's my friend John in San Antonio. I'm coming to you next. It is also important, as you just mentioned, that not only you read that, but the reason you want to read other things is you want to know, have you ever listened to people talk and wonder why are they saying those things? A lot of times it's because what they read. So the more you read, the more you can empathize with why there are a lot of people that say or think the things or think the way that they think, and be able to empathize with them and then have a conversation with them without prejudging them, because you were exposed to some of what they themselves were exposed to.
I couldn't agree with you more. That's exactly right. The only way you're going to be able to put a conversation with somebody who has a different perspective into perspective is if you have something more to go on than maybe just what they're saying. How is it that they came to those conclusions? Now, again, I don't shy away from the fact that I have my own views, I have my own values, and I have my own perspective of things, and we may or may not come to some sort of an agreement or even in a middle ground of some kind. And
absolutely.
And that's possible, but that's not a reason not to have the conversation. And it's not
absolutely
a reason not to stand on your own principles and your own beliefs about where things should go in terms of our governance, our society,
look,
our culture.
Greg, we have to coexist, friend. We have to coexist, and if you're coexisting, it means that you're going to be living with a lot of people with different points of view. I'm keeping you hot, but I want to get John in here as well. John, how you doing today, my friend? I missed you on Monday.
Yeah, good afternoon, Egberto. How you doing?
All right, talk to me, my friend.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about single payer. I mentioned a few weeks ago about this Sarah Cliff article in Vox Media on April 9th, and it's called Forget Obamacare, Vermont Wants to Bring Single Payer America.
You sure did.
Okay, so in May of 2011, Vermont passed Act 48, which establishes single payer in Vermont. In 2017, last year, the state of Vermont collected $2.7 billion in state taxes. Different estimates say that it will cost between $1.6 billion to $2.2 billion in additional revenues for the single payer system to work. Peter Shumlin, who's the governor of Vermont, who actually ran on single payer in 2010, seems perplexed in how they're going to raise the money. And so that's essentially about what the article is about, is nobody really knows how they're going to get this money. And this is what a lot of people, and you know, I'm one of the biggest single payer proponents in, you know, around. And so, I believe that this is the way we should go, but very few people are actually talking about what has to happen for single payer to work.
I want to interrupt you 1 second there, John, because I think one of the things that have to happen is, there's some memes going around Facebook with a Danish lady saying all the features that their society provides them, from health care back to taking care of your kids. I think they call it maternity leave and all that sort of thing. And they said, yes, we pay higher taxes, but remember, you do too. And then the way the meme went across is the meme made it known that, well, your $8,000 or so deductible to health care, that's a tax. Your extra expenses for child care, that's a tax. You know, so they kind of enumerated those kinds of things. I think... And then I'd like you to respond to that, but I think paying for single payer is simple, right? It's a tax. But if you tell somebody tomorrow that instead of paying $850 a month to insurance company, they're going to be paying $600 a month to a single payer entity, I don't think it's such a hard sell. But I think a lot of education is going to be required because of the fight that's going to be coming from the opponents to the new healthcare plan.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but I mean, you know, that's one way to approach it. But I mean, the fact is, like in Vermont. I mean, you're going to have to essentially, if you're just going to do what they call a value-added tax, which is, you know, pretty prevalent in Europe, to where they actually, the tax rates are, you know, usually around 20%, to where here, let's say, like in San Antonio, it's about 8.5%.
Right.
Essentially, you will be paying, you know, twice as much in taxes for every item that is taxable. There's a lot of different ways that one of the people, this guy named Steve Capel, said basically if you just raise the taxes, it would be 146% increase. Right now, the tax rate is 6% on items
18.
That you buy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it'll be quite an increase. And so, yeah, that's the argument that you need to make, is saying you're already paying that money to the insurance company, and you know, all you're doing is, you know, paying. You are paying more, but you're also paying for everybody. And so,
right.
I mean, I just don't see it as being an easy sell, because people, you know, who actually passed the bill in Vermont, who is probably the most liberal state in America, are really having a hard time even making the suggestion, because they know that the tax increases are going to be so large that they don't even know how to put it out there. And so I'm just trying to give you more of a take on reality.
No, but I want to put that into some perspective though, and let me give you why I hung on to the New York Times article so dramatically, because you remember what I said. The article said the New York Times article said people are migrating from healthcare from their business to the exchanges. Right?
Right.
Now what's occurring is the exchanges are still being run by several private insurance companies bidding, right? But there's a certain, there's a certain point that you're going to reach a place of diminishing returns, and that is when insurance companies have minimized all their costs and the average sick rate normalizes itself. That is the point of where you cannot get prices any lower, at which point the only savings come from eliminating the insurance companies. But here's a catch. You said it perfectly. You said a person cannot, you cannot raise taxes on people because of the way they think right now. But having people accept Obamacare as a middle line, here's what occurs then. Obamacare, over time, we are all migrated to the exchange, which for all practical purposes is still private. But guess what, what they don't really advertise as well? The Obamacare is really implemented as a progressive tax system. What does that mean? My family can afford to pay the $800 a month it costs for our insurance. However, there are a lot of people right now getting insurance for $26. So how did they implement that tax? They said everybody has to be insured. You have to buy your own insurance, okay? And when everybody has to buy insurance and when everybody is getting that insurance from the exchange, what occurs behind the exchange is immaterial to the average American citizen. So if eventually you knock the insurance companies out and put in a single payer underneath the exchanges, as far as the customer is concerned, they are still paying for health care based on what they can afford. But in effect, it is still a single payer system. You see what I'm saying? So
not really, but I mean,
I want to say that this concept is important from the article that I wrote, though. This part is very important because your argument is very, very valid. In other words, the increase in taxes is a problem if people see it that way. Because of the way we think, it's a logical way of thinking that people don't have. So if you put an exchange as in software, we call it a level of abstraction. That's what we call it when you're developing software. A level of abstraction means if you get everybody into an exchange, that's what they know. They are paying for their health care through the exchanges. Those who can't afford it, that exchange is still there for them, but they get subsidies from the government, okay, which covers whatever the rate is. Whatever occurs behind that exchange, whether it's private insurance, government-provided insurance, or a single payer, whatever happens behind there, as far as the customer knows, which is the taxpaying citizen, all they see is the exchange, and it's a progressive tax in the back. It's a progressive tax in disguise. Do you not see that, or?
Yeah, no, I see that, but I mean, when you're saying the exchanges, I believe what the statement you said is that the exchanges are single payer, and that's really
no. I'm not saying they're single payer. I'm saying America's vision toward what American sees, or every American is going to see, as this article says, when 90% of the people migrate to the exchanges, what they're going to see is whatever the exchange has to offer. Right now, the exchange does not offer single payer. It offers a central place where everybody provides their whatever they have to offer. What I'm saying, they're still going through this onehealthcare.gov interface, which is the scary thing that many who don't want universal healthcare fair, because everybody's entry to healthcare is through healthcare.gov. what occurs behind healthcare.gov is immaterial if that customer pays whatever they can afford to that healthcare.gov and in return gets healthcare, meaning gets their doctor, get their hospital, get whatever it is. So you can put anything behind healthcare.gov, single payer, multiple payers, anything behind can go behind healthcare.gov. And that was their biggest fear. Their biggest fear wasn't mandates and all of that. It was having a central location where you can backstop it with anything. And single payer is also a potential backstop to the healthcare.gov. That's all
right. Right. I mean, I'm just trying to point out the fact. I think actually, you know, people, you know, they should Vermont should still implement this. I mean, I do see how it's going to be hard to do it with the state of mind, you know, that people have. Even though Vermont is, you know, like I said, probably the most liberal state in the country, you know, are they going to tolerate, you know, taxes going up, you know, 70% more in their state taxes or their local taxes? I hope so. I mean,
I don't think it has to. And that is what I'm saying is a major, it is all semantics, right? In other words, monies are not going to be changing. Nothing is actually changing if you take a look at it. In other words, the price of healthcare, everything is going to stay the same or maybe get better if we can get insurance companies out of there. Let me ask you something first, though. Did Vermont implement an exchange right now?
No. They can't. First of all, the first thing they have to do is they have to have it approved by the federal government. And so they're not even at a point to where they have a system set up. They have to actually say this is how it's going to work. Yes, they did pass it in 2011, but then now they have to. The next thing they have to do is they have to say this is how we're going to pay for this. And so this is what the article says. You know, the article says that, you know, they've run to all these specialists from all over the world. The state of Vermont has, and they're saying it's going to cost between $1.6 billion to $2.2 billion more than they have, than the state taxpayers are paying right now. Okay, last year, the total tax income for all of Vermont was $2.7 billion. That's for everything. So now they're going to need, you know, like I said, it's about, you know, whatever. If it's 1.6, it's, you know, a little bit less. And if it's 2.2, I mean, it's around, you know, between 50 and 70% more than the tax income they're getting now. And they're going to completely, you know, blow up the system. They won't be a part of Obamacare. There will be a single payer system and that will be it. I mean, everybody will have insurance if they're able to do this, if this gets approved. But right now, what they're running into this, how are they going to sell this to the people of Vermont, knowing that they're going to have all of these tax increases? That's the dilemma.
I understand the concept of what you're saying, and I think the way that I'd like to express that is, I think when you speak single payer in the pure sense as Vermont is talking about, I agree with you that that is problematic. Having an abstraction layer like healthcare.gov is actually preferable. In other words, what I mean by that is the stopgap is having a mandate, just like they suggested for real, having a mandate and everybody required to have insurance and subsidies for those who can't afford. Those three concepts alone enables them to not have to call something specifically. You know that one point, let me give an example. The $1.8 billion that Vermont has to raise does not take into consideration that Vermontans right now are buying health care coverage with their own monies. Am I correct?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's an excellent point. I mean, that's you know, if, I'm sure that's what the politicians should be saying. I mean, Mr. Shumlin and all the other, you know, Bernie Sanders and all that point, that's going to be their main point. Their point is that you're already paying, you're paying whatever, you know, if you're a wealthy person or whatever, you're paying, and you don't get subsidies, you're paying, you know, $300, $400 on up,
right,
depending what your age is. And so you're going to – all that money, you're not going to be paying that money, but instead you're going to be paying more money in taxes. And so,
that's
the best way to argue it. I agree with
right.
What you're
saying.
Right.
What I'm saying is there's really not an issue if it's argued appropriately. And when I talk about healthcare.gov being the abstraction layer, is that you don't call it a tax. You call it just what it is, insurance. Until people are educated that – until we get a European-style education that really, really, really considers healthcare a right, healthcare a moral right, that is how I wouldn't even attempt to sell it any other way than to say, have that abstraction layer like healthcare.gov that people purchase something for this. And given that they're already required to purchase, just as the Supreme Court said, kind of ironically, it is a tax, right? And that's why it's allowable. So then, they don't want to call it that. But, I mean, if for implementation reasons, that's the best way to do it, because healthcare.gov, in effect, is a progressive tax, right? I pay $800 a month for my insurance. I have a couple of friends that are paying $26 a month. Oh, well, I'm paying $800 for three people. I have friends that are paying $70-something dollars for three people. Okay, it's a progressive tax system, as it is already, you know? So, I mean, I think if it's – I don't – you know, sometimes I wonder with our political intelligentsia, the way they say things and allow things to be spun, as opposed to looking at it from a practical point of view. And, you know, because I am of the utmost belief that people are very smart. The only problem is that some of the people that are putting out information fail to do it as they should. Well, that's my belief at least, you know.
Well, I mean, when I was talking about, I've been reading the Piketty book, and there was an article in the Huffington Post, and I talked to this about with Sam Cedar earlier in the week. That as great as Elizabeth Warren is, a lot of the admiration, I mean, a lot of the advice that Piketty thinks that should be, you know, implemented, like higher taxes, she doesn't really want to go there yet, you know, because, you know, it is a third rail. And so it's hard for even the most, you know, progressive politicians to say, no, you know, we shouldn't raise this to over 39.6% for the highest tax bracket. You know, they just feel like, you know, it's not going to benefit them politically. And so
they would lose. I mean, that's the reality. The reality is, after Reagan dropped the tax rate from, what, 90% to 70% or something like that? Or
70 to 28.
No, 70% to
28.
39%. Was it what, 28?
No, actually,
it's
28. Yes, 28.
But then it started rising after that. Okay, yeah. Now, that is almost like anything after that became a tax increase. You know, I mean, they played the game very well. And that is what we are fighting against. I mean, but it is a fight that we have to continue. But what you're saying is correct. No politician, liberal or otherwise, can go out there now and talk about raising tax rates to a marginal tax rates back to 70% or 90% or whatever. And the reason why, you know, in as much as that will touch nobody below the 99% value, nobody wants to. Maybe it's a 2% level. I'm not sure exactly. But nobody wants to put themselves on that bandwagon at all, because they will lose. Every American thinks at some time they're going to be within that tax bracket and have to pay that amount of percentage on their income. And the other thing Americans very much don't realize when people are talking about tax rates is that it's marginal tax rates, meaning that it goes to it only applies to the delta amount of your income thereafter. Many people just don't understand that. And it's the fault of our educational system right back, you know? So, I mean, go ahead.
No, that's a good point. I mean, and there is, you know, I've talked about this before. There's a massive amount of tax phobia. You know, people just want to look out for themselves and their immediate family. They don't, that's why I think there's so much resistance to the ACA. And is it, you know, people, I mean, it, if you look who are the most helped by the ACA, it's the bottom 20%, because a lot of them, the top bottom 10%, most of them are, you know, if they live in states outside of the Republican states, you know, that didn't pass the Medicaid expansion, they're eligible for that. And the bottom 20%, you know, are also, you know, highly, really, really did well, you know, because they hardly had to pay any premiums. And as you get up in the higher tax brackets, of course, for people, you know, who had a pre-existing condition, those are the exceptions and the under 26. So it did help everybody.
Yes.
But I mean, a lot of people who are, you know, upper middle class, they feel like, and I think statistics back this up, you know, that they're paying for other people's health care for poor people, and they don't see that as an asset. They don't see that as something that's good. They see that as something that's negative, to where I see that as something like I'm helping my fellow man. You know, I'm helping the person.
It's not even only that. And again, what I always talk about is how we, you know, how – we are such poor communicators because of the following. That person that you said don't necessarily look at it as helping their fellow man, that same person, if they see somebody hit by a truck and that person doesn't have insurance, that person isn't going to say, let him die. That person is going to, I mean, that's the American way, is that person is going to want that guy to get some sort of help. That's the reality. Nobody. There are very few, even those people on the right that you watch on TV sound very callous. When it's something that they're experiencing in real time, they themselves want to help. So my contention is that our communication has been very poor in the following. If you take a look at that person that says, well, they don't want to help, the reality is all Obamacare did is made things honest, and you know that very well, John, because when that person goes to an emergency room or that person gets any kind of health care, that is reflected in the price all of us pay. So, I mean, people have to realize that it's something that is already being done. It's just not mentioned. And for the times that it was done through the tax dollars, meaning that the losses were billed to the federal government, all of us paid it in taxes. When the losses are billed to the insurance companies in higher rates, all of us are paying those taxes. So people have to understand the honesty, or people have to be given the information, this type of information, and let them actualize it, because, you know, otherwise, yeah, those feelings can come through. John, let me get to 816. I'm leaving you hot. 816, who do I have the honor of speaking with?
It's Jay.
Hey, Jay, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Egberto?
Great, great, great. I heard I'm going to have you guys on the show on the 21st, talking Lincoln.
Yeah, talking a little bit about Lincoln's critics.
Yes, yes. But anyway, what's going on, Doctor?
Well, I just wanted to make a few points on this conversation you're having, which is a really interesting conversation. But, I mean, I think, you know, you said it's, that people need to be educated better?
Yes.
Okay. Whose job is it to do that? It's the political parties. You know, conservatives, at a time when tax rates were 70% and we had an expanding social welfare state, the conservatives began a process of building arguments to support their preferred policy goals, which is cutting taxes. So we hear endlessly the word job creators. Liberals didn't counteract that, and they have yet to develop coherent arguments on why the wealthy are not job creators. And in fact, all those arguments are out there in academia. I mean, we know that when middle class is large, when ordinary people have money to spend, they spend it. There's a multiplier effect. And the economy grows. People with lots of money don't hire new workers unless ordinary people spend money. So those sorts of arguments need to be made. In the case of healthcare, there's a really great argument that could be made for a single-payer system that people just aren't making, and that is the notion of free riders. Because of the way law is in the United States, if you get sick, you go to a hospital, you get treated. So there's a large percentage of our population that gets health care that doesn't pay for it. And what we need to do is make them pay for it. And the way you do that is by creating a single-payer system where everybody's taxed and everybody ends up paying something to get health care. It's far more efficient. And America's all about efficient, and they're all about everybody paying.
Douglas, I agree with you. Oh, did you have another point as well?
No, that's it.
Yeah, Dr. Sachs, I tell you what, I completely agree with you. John, however, made an important point when he spoke about the Vermont issue and how they were going to get across calling this thing a tax, because we're so anathema to hearing taxes being raised and all that sort of thing. So I think, first of all, you're absolutely correct. Generally, you would think it's a party's responsibility to educate. I kind of also think one should get educated in civics classes in schools. Like when I was in school in another country, we actually got civic classes that showed how a system works, how the system actually functioned, and made you think about how politics really worked. We don't have that anymore, so people don't do that sort of thing. Now, you early one of your first points when you mentioned about political parties should be the one educating, you're correct. Unfortunately, they are not. So the next step is, who does the educating now? You know what I say, Dr. Theis? You do. And I think you're in what you're doing in the community right now, you are doing your part. And John on the phone is doing his part. Greg Rusek is doing his part. My contention is that we are far behind in getting all this information, in really being able to engage people because of what started with I know you remember the Powell memo, how all these think tanks came about, the growth of all these think tanks with the Powell memo growing into the Cato Institute and the Heritage Foundation. So all these guys are out there funded to misinform. We are here doing it in a blog talk radio show, a Rotten Washington blog site, a politics done right site. We have to do things in a lot of different places, in my humble opinion. However, one of the things that I think we do have to fight about, and this is going to be off subject a little bit, but I bring it up in every discussion that I have, we really have to watch this net neutrality issue to ensure that we can continue doing what we're doing to try to build that grassroots from within. Because going under the radar is the tampering down of the Internet that these guys would like to do, because that is the really our last vestige of freedom left if we are really to be able to give out absolute, unbiased information. What do you think?
Well, I agree. But you cannot win arguments when you make the arguments on their terms.
Right.
And that's
give me an example of that. Give me a good example of that.
Give
me an example of how
the paradigm, and it takes time and it takes work.
Right. Right. Now, Doctor, I'd like to hear an example of how a lot of times we're making an argument on their terms.
Well, there's not a Democratic politician out there that says the wealthy are not job creators.
True.
Right?
No, I say that. You say that. John says that.
But not
Greg
a
says
single
that.
Elected official.
Right.
Not a single Democratic Party leader. That's their terms. Unless you challenge the fundamental concepts that they have, you're not going to win the intellectual debate. And it means you're going to lose.
Right.
I mean, think, Barry Goldwater was the predecessor of Ronald Reagan. He made essentially many of the same arguments that Reagan made. And he got creamed.
Right.
In the 64 election. Okay. It takes time to build those arguments and to get people thinking about it.
Right.
Okay. So But Democrats aren't willing to do that. They're not willing to go out there and run liberal candidates for 3 or 4 or 5 elections in a row knowing they're going to lose. Because
right.
they want the power. And they are willing to compromise their values or their supposed values in order to keep power. And it makes for ineffective governance when they get in. And it leaves people
right.
like you looking silly because you say if you elect Democrats, these things are going to happen, and they don't.
Well, actually, I don't necessarily stay on that particular argument. What I said is you try to elect the most viable candidate, but that part is sort of beside the point because I think at this point in our history, we have to try all means possible to actually save the working middle class.
Right.
By all means possible, because absent that, I know you read the paper last week about the America now being an oligarchy.
America being what?
An oligarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's actually
there's
a paper. John, did you were you the one that mentioned that paper, John?
Yeah, I mean, I've read it, and I saw the guys on John Stewart, and yeah, I mean, I agree to a certain point. I do think that there's, you know, sometimes people do get overly pessimistic, and I think that can actually hurt people, and I know I'm guilty of that myself, but I mean, that can actually hurt turnout. I mean, so many people say, you know, oh, they're both the same thing.
No, they're
you know,
not
both
the
parties.
Same, yeah.
You know, it says, why should I even vote if they're both corrupt? And
right.
so, I mean, I see what Dr. Theis is saying, and I do agree with it to a certain extent. But, I mean, you know, the fact is it's very hard to be a liberal candidate in a southern state or a Midwestern state and even win a Democratic primary. I mean, unless
right.
you have unless somebody like a Lloyd Doggett or a you know, Sheila Jackson Lee or somebody like that who were the actual constituents are liberal. And so,
right.
I mean, you know, it's just really hard to do that. I mean, just because
okay.
even Democrats are conservative. They you know, they don't want to go that far. And I hope that somehow, you know, Elizabeth Warren and Piketty and people like that can change the mood and make people more realize that is the vision that should happen.
I got to stop you right there, John, because we're only down to a minute and 30 seconds. So I'm going to ask Jack to give me 10 seconds. And Jack, just give me 10 seconds as a close out, please.
Yeah, okay. My question, how the heck you're going to raise taxes to pay for the public option.
Option.
And
okay,
we did
not
discuss Benghazi because of the dead horse.
There you go, Jack. Okay, Greg, give me a quick 10 seconds.
The administrative overhead in healthcare delivery systems in the United States today is at 30%. It's been documented by Harvard researchers. I put the link in the chat room. 30%
Thank you very much.
Of our health care costs go to private insurers. That can change.
Thank you, Greg. Throw that on my web page if you have the time to, my dear friend. John, give me 10 seconds. It has to be 10.
I think it's been a good week. You know, people should look at the ACA and like this guy, Dean Angston out of Philly, who his life was saved by his friend who signed him up for the ACA. He had a heart procedure, and he's alive right now because of the ACA. So
thank you very much, John. That was a great article on Daily Coast. Great article on Daily Coast. Jay, give me 10 seconds.
Let me just say, you start raising taxes in the places where people support raising taxes. Over 70% of Americans support taking the cap off Social Security, including every demographic group. We can raise those taxes. Americans have realized raising taxes.
I got 10 seconds, Jay. Thank you very much, guys, for being one more part of Politics Done Right. See you next week. Remember, coffeepartyusa.com.